A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, live in Chicago, man, the Windy City. And it is a little chilly out today, but it's not too bad. Not too bad. How you doing, Sam?
Doing great from across the hall.
We are in our respective hotel rooms, complimentary of the Fraternal Order of Police who brought us in for a workshop this week. We got to thank Rick and everybody who has supported a Badge of Honor and brought us here to Chicago on this well-needed workshop that, you know, we hope to help raise some awareness and help some of the first responders out there that are battling each and every day. Without the support of some of the politicians, without the support of the upper chiefs, and we hope to make a difference tomorrow when we're at the FOP.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Brotherhood of the Fallen. We've got a bunch of different sponsors that came together and pulled this off. We'll announce them all at the end of the show. But thank you for showing us the first class treatment in the Windy City. And thank you for giving a crap, because, you know, how many fundraisers do we go to throughout the year? We're going to have ours next year where everyone's, you know, shaking hands, raising money. It's all good. But to see the good in action is what it's about. And for Rick to reach out and say, hey, you know, we got to do this, because Chicago, look, if you're in a big city, it's a product of a lot of BS politics that are putting our men and women who are, you know, on the front lines every day in harm's way in terms of their mental health. And we're here to hopefully not fix the system, because that's not our role, but to give you tactical skills and strategies so that when the stress of the job comes up, you can deal with it right there and then instead of letting it go.
You know, and we bring this up all the time, is like, when is it enough, or what is the number that of suicides that have to happen before somebody with some power turns around and says, hey, wait a minute, there's something mm-hmm. wrong here. Is it one? It's two? We're looking at least 9 this year. We're looking at 10 2 years ago. So in the past 3 years, we're looking at probably 19 suicides just in the city. You know, when does a politician go, hey, we have an issue. Let's revamp our EAP programs. Let's take a deeper dive and look into these things. But they're not. They're looking at our first responders just like some of our military looks at our veterans, as robots. They're expendable. If they get hurt or if they show any weakness, they get kicked off the job. They get no support and they lose everything. And there's somebody right there to take their place. So we have to change that. We have to change the culture within the ranks. And hopefully, little by little, it will happen.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it also comes with, you know, whether they're out, you know, their status is because they're out with an injury. John, you and I have both, you know, talked to so many officers who, it's like, I'm battling because I can't do my job. I'm on light duty and all the everything's going through my head, and I got to figure out a way to fix this. But when I call, I don't get an answer, or they tell me to go see somebody that doesn't have any experience. And really gets into a frustrating loop.
You brought up a great, you just hit it, the nail on the head. When an officer gets injured, right, and they're on light duty, they get frustrated because they can't do the job, right? That's because we become the job. The job becomes our identity. And when we become the job, any little mishap throws our whole mental mindset out of kilt, right? Because that's, we don't know how to perform. This is what happens after retirement. When a guy leaves deployment and now he's back with his family, he doesn't know how to respond. When a police officer retires after 20, 30 years, like I said, man, they're on the couch watching Judge Judy in their underwear going, holy crap, what am I doing now? You know, but we plan as first responders our retirement, our financial, our medical. You know, we're going to open up a bar and live life great, right? But that's not the truth. We don't plan from the day one what the mental health outlook is going to look like when we leave the job, when we finally take that armor off, when we finally take that uniform off. What are we going to expect? And if we don't prepare for that, it's going to smack us when we least expect it.
Absolutely. And you know, when it does smack us when we least expect it, because when you're talking about something in the future, oh, I'll deal with it when it comes. I mean, look, we all do that. We are talking tonight to our guest from Boulder Crest Foundation. And what they do is, you know, exactly what we're talking about. They assist our veterans, our first responders, in finding a new identity and growing, finding who they were before they put the uniform on. And I think that's a great segue to bring on our guest tonight from Boulder Crest, Josh Goldberg. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Doing great tonight. Welcome, thank Josh. You so much, John and Sam, for having me.
Hey, you bet. You bet. Well, let's dive right in. Please tell everybody listening and watching why you got into what you're doing at Boulder Crest Foundation.
Absolutely. You know, I spend every day of my life surrounded by members of the military and veteran community and the first responder community. And I consider it the greatest privilege on earth. And naturally, both of those worlds are kind of family businesses. And so I get asked all the time, you know, you must have grown up, you must have served in one of these worlds. And it's always a fun game to get people to guess what they thought I did. And then follow that up by them saying, I say no, and they say, you must have a relative. And I said, that's not the case. I grew up as a Jewish kid in Texas, and forever it happened. You know, I got on this track of really trying to pursue what I would say is like the civilian dream life. I grew up listening to a lot of rap music, and there's a song by a rapper named The Lox, and it was called Money, Power, and Respect is What You Need in Life. And that, I really found myself chasing that. And in my early 30s, I found it. Like, I was married to someone who was incredibly wealthy. I had the house, I had the cars, I had all of those things. And I came to this realization one day. My wife came home and she said, hey, is this how you want to spend the rest of your life? And I was like, I never really thought about that question. And I started to think about it. And I realized that my entire life was a facade. And it was just false. And it was very much focused on this sort of external things. And so I went through a process of making a lot of changes to get divorced, switch careers, switch friends. And while that was very liberating for me, it was also incredibly destabilizing, because everything that had I derived value from, I gave away, and I began to struggle a lot. And I read a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which he was a Holocaust survivor and lost his wife and his parents and his brother in the camps. And I read this book and I was like, there's one thing in it that made sense to me at a time when I had no clarity. I was just in this fog of struggle and suffering. And it was, if I wanted to help myself, I should help somebody else. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do that. I've got skills that could be useful. And a week later, I got a random call from a friend who's like, hey, I need you to help this group. It's a couple whose wife's brother died in Afghanistan, and he's on the Cowboys. And I'm a Cowboys fan. It's like, can you help them? And I started, and I just, this door opened, and it was like all of these folks I met. And the way I think about members and folks like yourself is like, I met people who embody all the attributes I was taught as a little Jewish kid at Sunday school, what it meant to be a good person. And when I, you know, growing up as a Jewish kid, as a protected kid in Dallas, where parents, you don't have much struggle, is what you don't cultivate is strength and courage. And the two things you need when you're struggling a lot is you need strength and courage. And so for me, the people who helped me find that were members of the military and first responder communities. And so I probably could say to you that I probably wouldn't be alive if I hadn't run into men and women of this community. And so my story is a little different, which is I'm not some well-meaning civilian who, you know, looks at these communities like, oh, we should help these folks. I'm like, these men and women are saved my life. And so it's like anything I can do to make sure that they get to live great lives is, you know, what gets me out of bed every morning. And so it's the privilege of a lifetime to be an honorary member of a of a brotherhood and sisterhood that I didn't fight and claw my way into. And I just try to earn my place every day and be honorable in the process.
Wow. Well, it is amazing what you're doing with Boulder Crest, and we're going to talk about that when we come back after our first break.
And I'm still trying to wrap my head around this Texas Jewish rapper thing. I really want to see the videos. There's got to be a video out there somewhere.
You know, John, you should know.
And maybe Josh will have that video. We'll run. Just stand by, everybody.
What is the role of American government anyway? Is the role of government to decide where I can go and where I can't? Is the role of government to work tirelessly to destroy vital infrastructure that keeps goods and services from my customers? Is the role of government to choose who can drive, fly, or ride according to mandated stipulations that threaten my body, health, mind, and conscience? Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice too. Your voice, your feet, your vote, not just at the ballot box, but training to be a poll watcher, precinct chair, judge, or early ballot counter, so you're doing all you can to protect the fairly counted American vote. Move freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move freely, America. Because my voice
and my voice,
together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. MoveFreelyAmerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and our special guest, Josh Goldberg, the Jewish rapping Texan that has changed his life through an act of kindness and took a path that saved his life, which I feel is so inspiring. Because it's what we talk about all the time. You know, something happens in someone's life that changes their trajectory and it puts them on a path of self-healing, I guess that would be. And is that kind of like explain what you went through, Josh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no question. And I feel like there's a lot of good fortune in my life to have crossed paths with folks. And I think the thing that struck me the most was, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a police officer. I don't know what it's like to be in the military or be downrange and in battle. But the places that you get taken when you go through really deep struggle, those places I know, and I know very much. And I think that that's the part where, and your shirt captures the essence of all of it, is that's not a place that you can walk on your own. And when you're in that place is when you least feel like you deserve to be around anybody else. And so I feel like for me, you know, when you think about these folks who are tip of the spear, right? They're the ones who run towards the gunfire and are protecting other people. Is those are the people who really gave me the courage to do some really hard things, to do some hard reflections, and to think through how did I end up creating such a false life, and to find what it meant to be authentic, and ultimately, you know, to really know who I am and to be proud and be able to walk through the world in that way. And so, it's been a blessing, and you probably didn't realize that this, I was here to just promote my new album. You know, we'll get to that another time. But it is, and I think, you know, what I look at, and you guys talked a little bit about this in the intro, is when I think about people on the front lines of our society, is there are a select group of people who prioritize collective good over personal gain. And that includes our teachers, it includes our first responders, it includes our military, it includes our healthcare workers. Is they are said to be essential, but they are left feeling disposable and like their life doesn't matter. And so, you know, it's like everybody stay home and we're going to go man the streets during COVID. Everybody stay home or go to the mall and we're going to go to war. Is it's this undue burden put on these men and women. And my fear is that our society is only as strong as those men and women. And when those men and women start to falter, I don't know what happens next, but it scares the hell out of me. So I think that to me is, this is the backbone of our society, of these folks who realize what it means to be a good person and what it means to live a good life. And I think that what can't be is that the cost of service to our communities is the quality of people's lives. And currently, for far too many people, that is the exchange, is if I take this job and I do it for a career, I'm going to end up really, really severely busted up and not be able to enjoy anything on the other side of it. You know, and I'm going to be a burden to my family and to all, everything I protected. And then I don't get to enjoy any of it. It just, like I said, as a civilian, it doesn't work for me. And I'm not going to abide that. And I don't fully understand how we can tolerate a society where we lose more veterans to suicide than we do in war. We lose more police officers to suicide than we do in the line of duty. I don't understand how we can act like everything's okay, because it's not. And that's what we exist to address, to not just help a few people, but we are here. And my commitment is we are going to solve that problem. Maybe not for every single person, but we're going to fix the issues that are systemic that cause those outcomes, because systems get the outcomes they're perfectly designed for. And if 30 to 40% of people in all of these communities are struggling, then the culture is wrong and the system is wrong and we've got to fix it.
Well, we definitely know that, you know, state by state, city by city, you go all the way down, locale to locale. We do not have a perfect system. You know, money is always involved. And I think that's what, you know, when you log on to bouldercrest.org, okay, that's the main site. I just put it up here on the screen. For those of you that are listening on your favorite podcast platforms, bouldercrest.org, the video that is on your that front page, first of all, you're presented with the word struggle well. And as far as organizations go, you guys, you've kind of tipped things on its head, because the video is very to the point. It explains just that 2 minutes of what Josh is talking about and how we do need to flip the script. And we need to flip the script on ourselves, because we can't rely on our, whether it's EAP program, the department, whatever it looks like. If we're going to make a difference in our lives, in our families' lives, to be a healthy individual, sometimes we gotta take the bull by the horns and we've got to get into action. And the ability to go on your website, you know, to see apply here if you're a first responder or a veteran, do what you need to do to get involved in your organization and learn the meaning of struggle well, learn the meaning of post-traumatic growth, because we can't stay in the disorder talk, right?
Right, but you know, Sam,
we talked about that before.
But like what Josh said, man, you know, we can put all these programs out there. We can raise awareness. We can raise the red flags. But like Josh just said before, focusing on that change of life within yourself, realizing that the life that you're leading is not the life that you're actually, your inner soul wants. And that is the scariest part of it, to make that change, to say, I'm not going to be a young Jewish rapper anymore. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be this person. Nah, I'm putting a little levity to it. But when you look at someone who can change their whole dynamic in life, that is the hardest, most frightening step in the world. And you talk about courage and how to build your own courage within yourself. That's what Boulder Crest does. It builds that courage to say, hey, I am more than this uniform. I am more than the number that this department puts me on. I am a life. I'm a person. I have a family. I have kids or whatever. And that's what you build at Boulder Crest.
And I think that, you know, the two, I mentioned Viktor Frankl, who's a real hero of mine. And then Joseph Campbell's another amazing writer. And Campbell's got a famous quote that the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And that cave is inside, you know, like in my life and my training was that everything was external. So the only thing that mattered is what did everybody else think about what I was doing. And naturally that leads you to a certain place. And the problem is you get way off kilter from your North Star. And if you get too far off, you know, and you don't think you can come all the way back, then you're going to end your life. And that's where I got close to. And I think for me, you know, that courage to really understand who you are and to have that infuse every part of your life is special. And I think that, you know, as I look at this conversation and there's so many ways that we can go, you know, when I think about Boulder Crest and someone says, what is it? I say, you know, it's a nonprofit organization that is the home of post-traumatic growth. And naturally, then they say, what is post-traumatic growth? And what post-traumatic growth is a decades old science that speaks to the ways in which when we go through struggle and trauma in our lives, it can catalyze us to engage in reflection, to engage in introspection, that scary stuff that John's talking about. And in the process of doing so, what we figure out is we gain a greater sense of wisdom about who we are, about the role that other people have in our life, and about what it means for us to live a meaningful life. And that's the story of human history, is that we go through really bad things and we find some value and meaning in them. And the challenge with this whole PTSD debate is not that PTSD is not real, not that it's not a huge issue. is that what it leaves people with the sense is that it's a death sentence, and it's a death sentence to a diminished existence, and that you should get used to your new normal and just learn how to cope. And if it was true that trauma exposure was inherently diminishing in a permanent sense, we would not exist, because thousands of years ago, people would be in a cave, a tiger would go in, it would attack the cave, people in the cave, they wouldn't procreate, they wouldn't hunt, they wouldn't eat, they'd die, we wouldn't be here. But part of the issue is the narrative, is the perspective, is the conversation, is like, what have we done? And I call it, we're aiding in the destruction of once great men and women by focusing so much on one part of this story and not the other. And we have a good friend, Tim Adams. Tim recently retired from Miami Gardens, 51 years a police officer. Before that, was a Vietnam veteran. And Tim said, you know, the realities of the life of a first responder in personal and professional terms is that you will experience symptoms of post-traumatic stress. That is a reality and an inevitability. The question is, do you end up with a D for the disorder, or do you end up with a G for growth? But if people don't know that's possible, then they cannot possibly grow. You cannot be something you cannot see. And that's a big part of our effort, is to fundamentally change that conversation that honors the ways in which these professions cause us to struggle, cause people to go through difficult times, but not to limit their future because of that, but to realize that, you know, the only way out is through. And I think in so many ways, we've done a disservice to these amazing communities of people when folks get, when they deal with too much, is like, we essentially just say, here's some medication, here's some money, you know, sit on your couch. And of course, nothing good happens after that.
Absolutely. And we're going to, we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about the programs that you offer through Boulder Crest. We're talking to Josh Goldberg from Boulder Crest Foundation. We will be right back, everybody.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, with our special guest, Josh Goldberg, of talking about post-traumatic growth, which is a new term for me. And I'm embracing it, and it almost makes you feel good to say the growth part of it, post-traumatic growth instead of that disorder. I like that, Josh. It really, it changes your whole inside when you look at it that way. Just changing one of the words in something that has been demonized for so long.
You know, there's a quote from a woman named Mandy Piper. Mandy is currently a crisis response coordinator in California, and she lost her fiance in the San Bernardino ISIS-related shooting back in 2015. And in this article, and I was talking about one of our programs, and Mandy said that you have to know that post-traumatic growth exists in order for it to happen. You have to know it's okay to have good things happen after really bad things. And, you know, this weekend I was with a group of widows, and they talked a lot about this idea of permission. And I think that's one of the challenges, is you go through and you see a lot of awful things. And in some respects, you have to have permission to be sad, to struggle, to feel, and you have to give yourself permission to also realize that there can be to be glimpses of hope and positive things that can happen after that. And I think, you know, when I look at it, and I've gotten the chance to spend a lot of time with police officers over the last 3 to 4 years, and it just seems like, you know, the hardening of the soul, if you will, is what happens as someone goes through their careers. What they lose is they lose their humanity, right? They lose their ability to realize that they're not just the badge, and they go home and it's like, can't really connect with the folks at home. So you just get more overtime and more details. And now I can say I'm providing for my family, but I'm not really providing for my family because I'm not present with my family, but it's just easier. And it's like, but behind that badge, and you guys talked about this, is a human being. And what's really challenging is, how do I honor that human being? And how do I use the badge? Because it's true that you can't walk with a completely open heart and do the job. But I think that's part of where we talk about cultural transformation, is we have got to fundamentally shift the way that these professions work, not in a way that softens them, but I think in a way that recognizes that if we focus so much on readiness at the expense of wellness. It's like, what's the priority? We'll make sure people are good at their job. More training in this and this and this. But the only time their wellness matters is when they can't do the job. And it's like, well, you know, people who are well do their jobs well. And that, I think, is the focus. And we have had amazing partnerships with Chiefs in Miami and Tucson and South Carolina, who are these leaders who are like, my number one job is to take care of my people. And if I do that, then they will do a great job. Their community engagements will be amazing. The way they treat one another at the department will be great. The way the retirees feel when they leave is connected to something that's beautiful. Like, that's the part I think that has to shift is, you know, the jadedness that's so much a part of police culture is, I think, I love the humor. I think that stuff gets a little bit much.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. You and I met at Eagle Oak Retreat in Texas, where the Warrior Path program is going to expand. Can you talk a little bit about that and your other programs that serve veterans and first responders?
Absolutely. You know, Boulder Crest in 2013, we opened the first privately funded wellness center in the country at the time for veterans and first responders. And our hope was we would find really good programs that we could allow to use our place, and we would raise money, be a perfect marriage. Of course, there is no perfect marriage. So that didn't happen. And so in 2014, it was like, okay, we're going to need to build our own program. And what should that be founded in? And we talked to a lot of mental health folks. And what they told us is that the stuff we're doing is not working. And it's like, why are we doing it? And they're like, well, that's what insurance covers. We're not that innovative. And so that was that journey that led us to Dr. Rich Tedeschi, who we work with today, who coined the term post-traumatic growth in 95. And what we asked Rich if we could do was, could we build a program that was designed to train members of the combat veteran and first responder communities who were struggling to transform struggle into strength of post-traumatic growth? And Rich was like, I've never tried that, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And when you guys talk about stigma, a big part of this is that it's peer delivered, right? That it's training and it's not treatment, that it's done in cohorts together in beautiful places. So all of those things we look towards to make for an effective program that's all based on this idea of post-traumatic growth. It's immersive, 75 hours of training over 7 days, followed by 90 days of ongoing support with follow-up calls, a private social network, a range of other ways to do things. So we launched Warrior Path in 2014. In 2017, we bought a ranch in Sonoyta, Arizona. It's about 150 miles from Tucson. And we expanded Warrior Path there. And then in 2019, we started to partner with other nonprofits to have Warrior Path. So we now have partners in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Maine, Arkansas, Washington State. And finally, for this Texas boy, I can potentially wrap at the grand opening, is in Texas, in a place called Italy, Texas. And we met an amazing couple named the Watanabes, Steve and Lillian, and they decided to depart retirement in Hawaii to do something and do right by the first responders and veterans in Texas. And so the Warrior Path program, which is done once a month for 6 to 8 veterans and first responders, like I said, it's 7 days of intensive training on the ground, followed by 90 days of support. And we measure the heck out of this, including some work with Baylor University. And on any measure, it's about 4 to 5 times more effective and more sustained than traditional mental health approaches. And a lot of that goes to issues of trust. It goes to issues of relationship. It goes to what you guys talked about. Like, people don't get this community. And so that's really been our focus, is to focus on that. And the truth about this culture is, if you wait for people to self-select into a program, you're going to lose a lot of people to suicide, to alcoholism, to divorce, to other types of things. And so back in 2020, in the midst of COVID, you know, for us, it was like, okay, we're about post-traumatic growth. How do we as an organization take advantage of this moment and make something meaningful? And so we started to kind of finish having a lot of conversations about how could we take the ideas of post-traumatic growth and bring them into the culture of first responders in a more effective way. And we launched our Struggle Well program, which bears the name of a book that Ken Falk, who's our founder, and I wrote in 2018. And we started doing that in Miami, and it's been nuts. I mean, it's quickly become our biggest program, and it gives us the ability to go into cultures like at the South Miami Police Department or across Miami-Dade, Tucson Police Department, Richland County Sheriff's in South Carolina, and Oregon with the state police, and have a different conversation. Like, John, the way you're like, I've never heard of this, is we get to go in and do that. And then all of a sudden, every month, you're training more and more people. And all of a sudden, the conversation that's happening in that department is people are signing their emails off saying struggle well, right? And it's starting to create not the coolest part, that's amazing on itself. But as an unintended consequence, it's affecting the way those officers interact with members of their community. And, you know, and that's amazing to me as well, when you think about building these bridges back between the police and the people they police.
I'm just going to be honest with y'all. There's one thing that really scared me, and it's the way you presented when you talk about the 7-day intense program, right? Let's soften that up a little bit. I mean, I don't know how much you can go into it, but that's a scary thing for a lot of first responders. When they hear 7 days of intense training, you know, if it's got nothing about shooting or rappelling out of a helicopter, they don't want to hear that intense emotional thing. So, like, what does that entail? Like 7 days of intense training, if you can get into it a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, we come to a point in our life where we have to take a knee, right? Where life's just been like, where our rucksack gets so heavy that we can't continue to walk. And so, you know, to me, without saying too much about the program, is it's the opportunity to figure out what the hell you've been carrying and then what you want to keep carrying, to learn practices that are designed. You know, one of the things we talk about is like, what people in these communities have is they have on and off switch, right? So the on switch, something's happening, and then you go home and you shut it off. But what we need in life is a dimmer switch. We need the capacity, you know, to go up and to go down in a fluid way where we're not just green or red. And so a key part of it is to train practices and learn things. But they're all warrior techniques. It's all peer delivered. It's definitely hard work. I mean, I don't want to, you know, we have, and I get like, there's a little bit, it's scary. I mean, this is this whole point. It's like the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. It's like, but you think about all of the crap that has disconnected you from who you really are. And what I find really valuable about it is it's not just for people who've left the professions. Is, you know, you have special operators who will come through because they want to continue to do what they do, but they can't keep doing it in a healthy way. So they come away, and it's almost this power washing. It's like, it's this cleansing of like, okay, I can let go of this stuff. I can make sense of it. And I can learn healthy ways to deal with it. I mean, that aren't alcohol, infidelity, and more work. Is like, how do you learn healthy ways to slow life down, to reconnect with yourself? And so, you know, but I don't want to not acknowledge that it's challenging, because I think it's important for people to realize. But I'd say that it may be the hardest thing people experience, but I can say definitively it's also the best thing that, you know, we've had more than 2,000 people go through the program, and I think just about every one of them would say that it was the smartest thing they ever did and the hardest thing they ever did.
Right.
And you get to the point where it's like, hey, what I'm doing isn't working, and I'm open, right? So and so I feel like you know, and it's beautiful. It really is an amazing thing to get to witness and bear witness to. And it's, you know, so it's not all like,
it's almost like a new birth. It's almost like watching a new birth or a baby being born, because you see this transformation into somebody who is just finding out who they really are, you know, and they're like, wow, this is a new revelation for them. And you get to see that. You get to see that transformation of a new life, being a person of being happy, a person to maybe first time experiencing joy and experience his relationship or her relationship. You see that connection built. I envy that. I would love to see that.
Well, yeah, well, we should get you to see it, Sean.
We are talking transformation with Josh Goldberg from Boulder Crest Foundation.
What you guys are doing with the post-traumatic growth is like, you're stress luggers. You're taking away the stress. You're taking, you know, you're bringing all the stress to your one location. You're loading it up on a truck, and people are leaving just so much lighter and so much freer. And that, it kind of put that relationship. So you guys are stress luggers. You're moving that stuff away for all our first responders and our veterans.
You know, I want to just touch on something before we took the break, because I think part of fear for a lot of people is this, you know, the transformation word, and am I going to go into a program? Are they going to change me? And I'm going to come out a completely different person that my family's not going to recognize, or heck, that I'm not even going to recognize. And then how am I going to do my job, or, you know, go back to being the me that, you know, my friends knew before I became a cop or before I went into the military? And that's not what you're doing, Josh. Can you break that down? Because I think that's the unknown.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, when you look at it, and I said, like, we've got these two primary programs, is our struggle well effort, which is when we come into these cultures, and the Warrior Path program is, I mean, I think fundamentally, and this goes to what John's talked about, is, you know, it's really about, you know, clearing all of the crap that's gotten in the way of who you really are, right? Like, as a human being, is, and because this is what you know, when we talk about the cost of these jobs is your humanity, is your ability to meaningfully connect in relationship and demonstrate love for the people you care about. Is I don't believe that's mutually exclusive from doing what you have to do in order to do your job. And I think that that the idea is, it really is the stress logger thing that, that John talks about. It's so powerful. It's like, you know, how do we find ways to clear all of the crap and all of the stress that's in our system? And when I think about it, you know, 20, the average first responder, the male law enforcement officer, lives 20 years less than the average American male. It's crazy. And what is that? That's stress. It's stress and shitty coping mechanisms. And so to me, it's and the question I would ask is, and it's not changing into a fundamentally different person for sure. It's becoming a whole human being who's capable of being able to do a really hard job for, you know, that can be very difficult at times, but also able to be a human being. And I think that the proof is in the pudding. The one thing we never wanted to create was a program that allowed people to be well, but it came at the expense of doing the things they love the most. And at times, I mean, certainly when you think about what is war, war is having to do bad things to bad people. I mean, that's the essence of war. And so we don't want someone to show up and be like, oh no, I don't want to do this. It's like, that's, we need people who will be able to do these jobs, but they have to be able to come home in some measure of wholeness, or else how are people going to continue to do this? Like, who's going to sign up to do these things? And I think that, that that's at the heart of what this is all about. And that's probably one of the things I'm most proud about is for special operators or SWAT team guys to be able to say like, hey, I'm better at my job in large part because I'm also a heck of a lot honest, more honest with the people I work with. Because that's the crazy thing is like you go into a room of 28 SWAT team guys and five of them are going through really painful divorces and they won't share it with each other. And you think like, because that may mean that someone else might think they're less dependable or they're supposed to be having their stuff figured out, is that makes them less dependable because they're not talking about this stuff. And the crazy part is they're preventing themselves from getting the support that they deserve and they should have. And I think that's the biggest lie about these communities where it's like, I do anything for you. I do anything for you, but I'm not going to talk about anything I'm struggling with because I'm supposed to have it all figured out. And the truth is nobody does. Like none of us have it all figured out. And I think that is the key to this is, you know, my dream in life is we need to normalize struggle and democratize the ability to struggle. We all go through struggles in our lives. And when we do, our top instinct, in addition to isolating, is we want to feel like we can figure it out on our own. And it's like, well, cool. Why don't we teach people to do that? And that's what we're doing. And then teach the people around them to help them do that. And that's what democratization of mental health is. It shouldn't be you're struggling, go talk to somebody that you've never met, who you connected with through EAP, who doesn't give a hell, doesn't give anything, and doesn't understand what you've gone through, doesn't understand the first responder world. And good luck to you. But by the way, you get 6 appointments with insurance. So I hope it cures up, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't work. 90% of people also don't trust agency provided resources. So A, how do we support the rebuilding of trust? But B, how do you have other resources, which like what you guys will do tomorrow is hearing from outside voices is a very important thing in these professions, as is peer support. I mean, those are the two most trusted devices. And you just got to lean into them. And so we do a lot of work with peer support folks. And I think what you guys are doing, what we're doing is what we have to do, which is work on changing the conversation, give people a different perspective and give them the skills they need to navigate these lifestyles in a way that enhance as opposed to diminish their lives and the lives of the people they love. And
you
the people they serve.
Sorry, Josh, you had mentioned early in that conversation the book that you co-authored, and I think it's a great place if people have questions. You can go onto bouldercrest.org and you can order a copy of the book. You just click on it, and if you're hesitant, I mean, first of all, if you haven't heard, these are at really beautiful places, and they're at ranches and for a reason. Because it allows you to decompress and to connect with nature, to be in a spot where you've got a little bit of a comfort level right off the bat, because you're not in an office per se, you're not in this person's backyard, and you get that, oh my God, is he or she going to find out? Is my job going to find out? And so, you know, if you're still curious, just not sure you want to jump right in, just check out the book and read it and find out that what struggle well really means and why you want to learn how to do that.
You know, Sam, you're right, but we're trying to fix a system that's broke, right? We're kind of going at it the wrong way. Cause when you look at, you know, we just flew in today, right? right? The plane ride was wonderful until we started landing. It got really windy and the plane was going all over the place, causing a lot of stress to a lot of people, but especially the pilots, right? So when you look at a pilot and you look at an air traffic controller who are deemed probably one of the most stressful jobs behind law enforcement, military, right? What do? When they go into the job, they are given a mental health plan that says, hey, listen, after 200 hours of flying or whatever, I'm just picking out that number, but after so many hours of flying, you have to stop, decompress, talk, and get those things out. If you had a deal where you had a near miss, or if you're an air traffic controller and you had a plane crash, you know, these cultures, these employments, they take these guys off the field and they heal them. We're not doing that. We're compressing trauma over trauma over trauma. When I got into my shooting, it was a 5-minute thing with the counselor. Hey, you okay? Sure, I'm fine. All right, go back out in the field. Thank you. Lied my ass off, you know, but that's what happens. We have to start this from the very beginning. As people start taking the jobs, we have to heal them throughout their career, because if not, they're going to be opening up Pandora's box on retirement and a whole shitload of stuff's going to come out of there. And we're just going to keep doing this vicious circle.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And, you know, that's why, again, being able to take a step back to reach out to people like Josh, to reach out to organizations like Boulder Crest, again, it's bouldercrest.org, and get out of that, get out of your head, but get out of your environment to do a program, which is not sitting on the couch for the entire week with therapy. That's not what Josh is talking about, but it does take the investment from you to do the hard work. John, you've been there. I've been there. Hard work is part of it. That's part of the transformation to come out to the other side. We got to take another quick break.
Before we take a break, I just want to reiterate on something like that. You know what? I went through the 30-day thing, but it was after a suicide attempt. I was at my peak, right? How many officers? Why can't the Palmers turn around and say, hey, listen, for the next 7 days, you're going to go to Boulder Crest and you're going to relax and we're going to pay for it and we're going to make it acceptable that you went there and make it culturally acceptable to go away. Don't say, well, I'm just taking a vacation. No, I'm going to Boulder Crest to decompress. I'm going to learn more about myself. Those are the values we have to get into. Now you can take a break.
Thanks, John. We'll be right back with Josh Goldberg from BoulderCrest.org, Boulder Crest Foundation. Stand by.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam with our special guest, Josh Goldblum. Goldberg, powered by the OBBM network. And you heard that Move Freely America commercial? Well, move freely, first responders and veterans. Your voice is important. Your voice should be heard. Let's hear your voice. Don't let someone stifle your voice. Move freely, heroes. That's just my two cents.
You know, and if I can pick up on where we were talking about before, you know, I think about and you know, John, what you said is there are certainly our chiefs and leaders who I think are who understand, right? Who get it, and I think that when I look at that and I think about it, and Chad Kazmar, Chad's the chief in Tucson, it just is a really good guy and incredibly thoughtful and cares deeply about his people. And Chad had this quote, and he said, "The reality is about his officers, these are human beings who have sick children, who have aging parents, who have just suffered a loss, and who are still trying to process a child dying in their arms a shift before. These are all things where if we don't create an environment where we can talk about it, where we can offload those feelings and support one another, we're going to have outcomes in the field we don't want and officers leaving the profession much sooner than they should." And I think, you know, that's the truth to us, is there'll never be enough seats at a warrior path. There'll never be enough mental health professionals. Is in so many respects, there's something about this culture where there is a lot of trust and there's a lot of connection. And what we need to build is some expertise that allows people and democratizes these ideas of post-traumatic growth so that people can help one another. And that to me is like I said, what my dream and the vision of my life is how do we do that? Because, you know, like I said, there are times and places where people need to go away, but we need to sort of look at the entire bell curve of people from prevention, intervention, and say, hey, we have got to figure out, and you said this earlier, is what do we do when people come into this profession? And if we sit in the academy and talk about PTSD, I mean, what the hell are we doing, right? Like, you know, it's like, you know, there's a guy comes into the NFL and then you start talking about CTE. It's like, I'm not sure that's that sensible. It's like, hey, this is a difficult lifestyle. You're right. You're going to be exposed to other people's traumas all the time. Their worst days. How are you going to navigate that? That's going to change you. But how, right? Is it all going to be bad? Are there going to be aspects of it where you can grow and learn? And I think that's got to be the perspective, because, and it really has to be comprehensive. And that's why we both, you know, we talk about culture change, is it's not simply about having programs to help some people who are struggling, because there are a lot of people suffering in silence who don't think there's any alternative, and who are the kinds of people that you get the call, be like, they found so-and-so in his garage. And it's like, well, no one knew. And it's like, well, why not? Like, why are we not meaningfully connected with each other? And why do we not understand what's happening? And why, do, like, you know, and I think that's what we've got to work on is, you know, figuring that part out.
I kind of disagree with that a little bit. No, you know, when you say nobody knew, everybody knew. Think everybody knew. It was just that they don't know how to have that conversation. They don't know how to approach it. You know, me and Sam bring this up all the time. You know, we ask, hey, you okay? The normal response is, yeah, I'm fine, I'm okay. And then we leave it at that when we know deep down that that's a lie. But we take that for face value. So we do know. We recognize the signs. We just don't know the approach. We're worried about doing – we're worried about overstepping. We're worried about, you know, maybe violating somebody's mental health trust or becoming vulnerable. That's what we have to do. We have to learn to be vulnerable to each other and open up.
You know, and John, I think that's 100% truth, right? And I think two things. One is if you ask someone how they are, the first time you say, how are you? They're just going to think it's a fine. Okay, whatever. If you ask them a second time and you look at them, they're going to tell you the truth. And then you're right. Most people are scared. Well, I don't know what to say. And what if this person, the rest of it? But you don't have to solve other people's problems. It's like letting people know that they're not walking this journey alone is the process of listening to them. Right. And, you know, we had a woman come through our training from Highland Park, Illinois, where that mass shooting was on July 4th. And she went back the day after the training and she got a call to go to a dispute at a car wash, at a gas station. And she had paid $10 for a car wash and her brand new Escalade, goes to the car wash is broken, and gets all upset, goes in. And there's not a physical altercation, but they're yelling at each other. She calls the police. The police come. This woman comes, officer, and says to the lady, please sit in your car. Goes in, gets her the $10, comes back out, and could have just given her the $10 and gone about her day. But she had this thought in her mind. And she looked at this woman and she said, I have to think that this isn't about $10 and it's not about this car wash. She goes, everybody has a story and I want to know what yours is. And this lady proceeds to tell her the story of how her daughter texted her on the way to the car wash to say she was going to kill herself. And she was calling the police in Connecticut to go do a wellness check, but she had lost her son the year before in his sleep. And she kept saying, I can't lose another one. I can't lose another one. And this police officer took a vested interest in this woman's life that maybe took her an extra 10 minutes to just say, like, I realize that I could have just made this a transaction, but I don't want to do that. Something is going on. And this woman wrote her a note about, I didn't think anybody cared. And that idea of like realizing that you're not alone to me is like so immensely powerful. And that's your point. Like, we know we just choose not to engage because we have other stuff going on, or we're scared. We don't know what to say. And that's a big part of our training. It's like, it's not, you don't have to say anything. Just listen to somebody's stuff and story and let them know, like, hey, I can't fix your daughter, but I can listen to you because this is a lot to deal with on your own. And I think, you know, that's at the heart of this is my view is, you know, we are our brothers and sisters keeper. And what I can't abide by, and I yell at my friend every so often, because when I was really struggling, he asked me how I was. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be honest and tell him. And I was like, hey, I'm really not doing well. And he goes, you should probably talk to someone. And I said, listen, you MF-er, I am talking to somebody, right? Yes. But that's what we do to people. But think about that. But think about the message to me is like, oh, you're so screwed up. You got to talk to some random person you've never met in an office who has like a degree. Like, are you kidding me? And we kind of joke about it now, but that's what we do. And it's like, you know what? Like, don't ever tell somebody they should go talk to somebody. Is listen to them. Be the person they talk to. And that, I think, is like, you know, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
Well, that is a perfect message. This hour has flown by. Be the person that they're talking to. Huge. We have been visiting with Josh Goldberg, soon to be CEO of Boulder Crest Foundation. You can visit them at bouldercrest.org. And again, you want to check out all of these programs. You want to understand what it means to struggle well. Pick up Josh's book, wherever books are sold, you can do that. Just click on the link on the website. Josh, thank you so much. I hope you have more first responders and veterans reaching out because they deserve it. They deserve to live the lives they were meant to live. And God bless you and everybody at Boulder Crest that puts on these amazing programs to help us struggle well and live well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. You guys are amazing. Thank you. Enjoy Chicago and the training. I appreciate what you guys do.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks
so much, Josh. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Man, I'm looking forward to seeing him come to Texas.
Well, you know, he mentioned, so Josh has the inner Dallas accent because, you know, I have no accent from Texas, and I was corrected. It's Italy, Texas, not Italy, Texas. I was corrected very strongly. It's Italy, Texas, and Eagle Oak Retreat will be opening next year, and the Warrior Path program will be, that'll be another location to add to their list of locations where they can do this program. So stay tuned. Texas is coming here, or it's coming there, because we're in Chicago. We're not there. We're here. So I was out. That's where I met Josh at Eagle. They have a fundraiser at the Firehouse Gastro Park in Grand Prairie. That's coming up Thursday, December 1st. You can go to eagleoakretreat.org, find out about that. Hey, tomorrow we've got a huge program. Thank you, FOP7 and Brotherhood for the Fallen, for bringing John and I to Chicago, bringing a badge of honor to Chicago to talk about the tough stuff. After, if you want to find out more, go to our website, super easy, abadgeofhonor.com. Click on events. The flyer is up there. Rick's information to get a hold of him. Say, hey, you want to go tomorrow? It's going from 9 to 4, I think.
Yep.
And 9 to 4-ish, 9 to 5. We'll go for as long as people have questions because we will listen. So we're after that. It's the 22nd. We're doing Walk the Bridge here in Chicago. So stick around. You can do that with us as well. Visit walkthebridge.org to find out where you can participate near you. And John, as usual, it has been an amazing evening. We're not done. We're going to go have dinner with some incredible people. And, you know, it is just an honor and a privilege to be able, just like Josh did, to be able to serve. So with that, take us home.
You know, man, I'm blown away by Josh and the story. You know, not being a veteran, not being a first responder, but just being a kind human being, being to come out and say, hey, listen, I want to help. That just means so much to so many. That brings out the humanity in people. And that's what we can't ever forget. We can't forget about the humanity in people. We just be kind. Random acts of kindness have a ripple effect and can change people's perception in a heartbeat. You hear them every day. You don't know what the struggles that other people are going through. So before you jump off the handle, you know, do what that officer did, man. Just, hey, are you okay? why you like this, you know, and you'll be surprised. The door will open, but we have to learn to listen. We listen to hear, not to respond. And that's what a lot of human beings do. We listen to try to fix the problem. We're not here to fix it. We're here to listen and help you through it and guide you through it and show you they're not alone. So that's my two cents, Sam. And I can't wait to go out to dinner with the and for those who saw the flyer, Bank the Blue. That is not a typo. Right. That is not a typo. It is Bank the Blue. That is retired Chicago police officers that are willing to man a 24-hour hotline for our police
peer
officers.
Peer support, like Josh said, piece of that puzzle for the folks here in Chicago. Hey, thank you for supporting us. Again, subscribe, and you can check out, if you want more, a Badge of Honor podcast. We are on Rumble TV, so go check us our channel out over there. And again, till next week, this is John and Sam from Chicago signing off. Take care, everybody.
Take care.
Good night.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.